place in the World Cup. For us. He's scored! Australia have done it!
Hey, it's Adam Peacock back again with another Fox Football podcast. And it's a special edition of the Fox Football podcast, catching up with one of our best Socceroos right now. Well, it was great on the weekend to finally see the top level of football returning. With all due respect to the K-League and how good that is, the Bundesliga was back on our screens and the epicentre of world football all of a sudden, paying close attention to how this competition came back given the unprecedented times we're living in. One man who's involved but wasn't out there on the weekend is my special guest, Matthew Lecky, who's had a great career over the last decade in Germany, finding it a little difficult at the moment with Hertha Berlin. And in this chat, we touch on the difficult times he's facing right now, what the future may hold, what the past has been like, his time with the Socceroos, and a whole range of other things. Here it is, the chat with Matthew Lecky. Hope you enjoy.
And it's Matt Lecky on the turn! As we tick over into the fourth minute of stoppage time, Matthew Lecky with a much-needed and long-awaited international goal will give the Socceroos the win here in Sydney.
Matt, thanks for your time, mate. Crazy time in every part of the world right now, but the whole world's watching German football to see how it all works. What's it like to be a centre of it all?
Yeah, it's not bad, I guess. I haven't taken too much time to think about it, but it's just good to be, you know, be back, to hopefully get the season done, because it's obviously a tough time for everyone trying to figure out how to fit in all the games for the rest of the season for all the leagues, and not just that, Copa America's postponed, the European Championships, Olympics, and also qualifications for the World Cup. So it's going to be interesting to see how it's all going to pan out in the next couple of years. But it's good to be back, in the environment where we've got games.
Just in a wider sense, it's hard to get a touch on everything around the world. You only get the drip-fed, the little reports, and I'm sure you're the same. Maybe talking to family, you've got a bit more knowledge about what's happening here in Australia, about how we're handling all of life, basically, with what's going on. How has it been handled in Germany, and are they coming out of it? Does it feel like life's getting back to some kind of normality, or is there still a bit to go?
They're starting to try to slowly get it got back to normal. I think majority of the rules over here were pretty similar to over in Australia. What I know, just from speaking to friends and family, there was like rules where there wasn't much to do, and then if you could go exercise, that was one reason to go outside. And there was no real strict rule on not being able to go outside here, but like obviously shops, everything was closed. But now, you know, restaurants have opened up a bit now. Obviously with, you know, probably limited seats, so there's a bit more space around. But they're all trying to shops, smaller shops that aren't too big, certain square meters are opening up, shops are opening up, and restaurants as well now, so slowly getting there. But it's still obviously not completely normal.
Football, though, is back. So that's the little bit of normal that everyone's experiencing there in Germany. And I don't think the Bundesliga has ever been as popular as it was on the weekend. And being at the centre of it all, what is it like for a player to be living in all of that? Do you feel like you're kind of in a cocoon, bubbled away from everyone because you have to be, and it's all about being able to get to the weekend to play a game of football and get the season done?
Obviously, you know, you need to try to limit what you're doing when you're not training and for the games. We had our first game now back on the weekend, and we had to stay in quarantine in the hotel for a week. So it was obviously players and staff, and we weren't allowed to, obviously we were just the whole time in the hotel, and that was getting a corona test on Monday and also Friday to make sure everyone was negative. And now going forward for the next games, we're allowed to be at home, but they've just recommended that we don't do too much, in our private life. We'll see what happens. I think it's gotten to the point where they sort of want to see the season out. So there's been a few players that have picked up Corona, just before they decided to get this season going again. And they just decided, you know, everyone needs to try to build a big squad including maybe second team players. That way, if some players do pick up corona, it's sort of, in a sense, unlucky, and then just try to keep going.
What's the flow of information like from things like the Players Association over there in Germany? Do they have a massive say about the protocols that take place, or is it all the guys that run the Bundesliga, the people that run the Bundesliga, have pretty much set the standard of what you have to do, and if you don't follow that, you're in all sorts of trouble?
Yeah, like I said, you know, they obviously have their rules around the club. But I mean, in terms of, you know, at home, you just need to, you know, take care of yourself and sort of be professional in that way that we can try to see the season out, because they can't control everything. Obviously, they can't see everything you're doing. So it's just up to the player to do the right thing. And I think, you know, they were very keen on getting the season going again and trying to see it out, because there was only 9 games left. And then they wouldn't have the problem with the, you know, the promotion, relegation. Clubs, you know, were in contention for Champions League, Europa League spots, and maybe, you know, just outside. So there was a lot of talk and speculation on what they were going to do, because obviously some clubs weren't too happy with, you know, that the league had stopped. But now it's continued, I guess. It's the best outcome, because I think it's going to be tough to make decisions if some leagues don't finish.
I read with interest, there was a story from, you're hearing all these little protocols that each club has brought into just to make sure everything's okay. And we saw Borussia Dortmund, when they scored their first goal, Haaland, he didn't go in near any of his teammates, and other teams, they were hugging and carrying on like it was normal. Eintracht Frankfurt, I read, they actually set out, so no one shared a water bottle, they set out their water bottles on the sideline in formation, so the player could come over and just make sure he grabbed his water bottle. That sounds very German, by the way, very organised. Has Hertha Berlin got these little quirks about how you're organising yourself at the training ground or on match day as well?
Yeah, pretty much ever since, you know, we've been back at training, like I said, we had our 3 groups before we could train as a team, and then there was like 3 set areas where there was water bottles and everyone had their own number. And also on the game on the weekend, it was, you know, it wasn't set up in formation, but every player had their number on the bottle. So they're trying to make sure everyone has their own individual bottle, that they're not, you know, sharing fluids. And yeah, in terms of once you're on the pitch and the game starts, everything is pretty normal. It's just everything leading up. It's still, you know, this sort of situation where they want to try to keep distance and everything. So there's rules. There's some rules, like, you know, the certain time you arrive at the game, you're only 30-40 minutes later in the change room. Players aren't on the bench, so they're all just sitting on like the first row of the stands with like 3 seats between them. So there's distance, and even the players on the bench, until they're actually warming up or having to come on, they have to also wear the mask for the whole game. So pretty much it's still very strict, just until you're actually on the pitch and you're in the game.
Is everyone coping as players? They just see it, and I know you're near the finish line in terms of the season, so it's a case of we're happy to live like this for a few weeks, because it's just about getting to the end of the season. Because back here in the winter footy codes, for instance, like rugby league, there's been all sorts of dramas with players breaking lockdown, if you like, and putting up TikToks of them at people's houses dancing when they shouldn't have been at other people's houses and all that. Is football not down that path? Because you guys are, I mean, sometimes you're just used to living in a hotel for 2 weeks and not being able to even go outside.
Yeah, to be fair, till now, there hasn't been too much. I mean, we had a bit of a scenario with Solomon Kalou. He also posted a video, which was a live Facebook thing, and he was going through the change rooms, and it wasn't too out of, you know, it wasn't too crazy, but you know, obviously it didn't look good. So he actually his contract's been suspended, so he won't play with us anymore. So obviously, when you go to that sort of limit, over that limit, then there are consequences. But otherwise, I think, I don't know, obviously everyone's different, but the players are well aware that they have to, you know, be professional, because, you know, it can affect the whole team. And for example, with Solomon, it's obviously affected him, because he's now not with us anymore. And, you know, then we also, I think, and that was the time they were pushing to try to get us training as a team again. And after that happened, we had to wait a few more days. So, you know, sort of delayed everything that the club had worked so hard to get going, the team training again. So it just comes down to being, you know, doing the right thing for yourself and also for everyone else, because, you know, it could sort of like affect everyone or the process for the whole club. And it's always just going to bring bad media anyway. So, you know, there was another scenario on the weekend where, you know, there was a photo taken of one of our players, and it looked like he was sort of like giving our other player a kiss. But if you actually watch the footage of the video, it was just the corner kick, and he's just, you know, spoken in his ear to say, you know, what they want to do in that sort of situation in the corner, and they sort of blew it up a bit. So, the players understand everything, but it's sort of also confusing because some of the stuff doesn't really make sense. But it is what it is. We know, you know, it's something we need to do. And hopefully, you know, the flow can be smooth all the way up until, you know, the 9 games have been played.
I mean, that kiss at the corner, you guys are a tight team, obviously, but that's going to an extreme.
When you actually see the photo that they've taken, it actually looks like he's kissing him on his forehead or like near his ear. And I don't know what the article actually said, they said something like it was happening in a situation after a goal, but, you know, I've seen the video of actually when it happened, and it was his mouth, or like his face was near his face for about a second. And it was like, he obviously just told him where to go in the corner, or what sort of corner, they wanted to set piece they wanted to take, but it just didn't look good, you know.
Oh well, there was a reason behind it, so that's the main thing. Hey, you weren't involved on the weekend, obviously, and it's continued a kind of frustrating season for you, because every season for the last five, I think, you've been involved in Bundesliga football. You've played a heavy part in whatever team you've been playing in. Can you update us on the situation of how it is over there for yourself personally, in terms of the eyes of what they call the trainer over there, or the manager, and the club as a whole? Because the club as a whole has undergone a pretty big transformation of late in terms of change of ownership and lofty ambitions with a lot of money involved.
Yeah, it's definitely been probably the most frustrating season for me overseas. And yeah, how should I say it? I mean, it started this season. Obviously, they got the new investors in and made a few signings, but it's just sort of the way the club goes. And, you know, I sort of had a feeling that, you know, it would be a tough year. I was thinking about leaving already this the start of the season, but my wife was pregnant and nearly having a baby boy. So, you know, just for, you know, we had already the hospital and everything set up. So for family reasons, I decided to stay here for another season. And but yeah, look, you know, when I first arrived, you know, obviously I was a new signing and I was playing, and the season before there was two players that were sort of in the same situation I'm in now. They were, you know, playing the season before. I think one of them scored like 8 goals in the season. He was like a big part of the team. And you know, the season I came and a couple of others came, like, he was just sort of not involved anymore. So, I mean, obviously the club's ambitious, and, you know, they always look to, you know, do something with their squad after a season. So, you know, I sort of, it's hard to take, but it's just, you know, it is what it is. That's football. And for me, that's not the biggest problem. I mean, if I'm not in the plans of the club or the coaches, that's just the way it is. I continue to train hard. And, you know, I don't muck around or anything or start causing problems. I still continue to train, like always. Just for me, the tough thing to take is, I mean, sometimes you don't, it's hard to say, like, you know, players don't get rewarded for their hard work and training and stuff. You know, they've got the same guys that are always training hard, giving 100%, even training well, and then some others maybe that are in that situation where they're starting players, or they're players they bought and, you know, they sort of taken it easy and just doing their own thing and still, you know, they're the ones that, you know, play on the park on the weekend. So that's majority of the time the most annoying part of it. But yeah, it is what it is. I mean, hopefully see out this season and then see what options I've got next season.
I'm not trying to fish for a quote so that you end up training with the under-15s when they read about a quote or anything. But I just want to get a perspective of what it's like for a footballer going through that situation, especially now wider, because there's so much unknown about the future. But your day-to-day future is still about trying to be the best footballer you want to be and playing as much top-level football as you can while you can. How do you have those conversations with your manager? You've had a few this season, I mean, including Jürgen Klinsmann, before he was moved on after a bit of a rough trot. So how do you go up to the manager and have a conversation, or you're left as a bit of a mute and you've just got to let actions speak for themselves?
Yeah, to be fair, like, I haven't really spoken as much as, you know, maybe I should have or could have. You know, I've just tried to, you know, leave it on the pitch and train hard and try to train well and get my opportunity. And normally, you know, if you're working hard and training hard, then the opportunity comes. But just one of those things where I just haven't had even a chance. I mean, since this is my third year in Berlin and this is the toughest year for us, like where we're sitting on the table and just the amount of points and how we've been playing, it hasn't been a good season. So normally in cases like this, when it's not going well and results aren't going well, it's a rotation or just, you know, trying out some players that, you know what it's like when you're losing, then sometimes you just change players up, and that hasn't really been the case as much as what I think should have happened. But so it's really hard to say like a lot, like it's really hard to really say anything or what to think, because like I said, you know, we finished I think 10th in the first season I was here, and also 10th or 11th last season, and we're 13th at the moment. But just in general, you know, we haven't picked up as many points as the seasons before. So yeah, this is the frustrating point. It's just pretty much that the opportunity hasn't come around even to have the chance to play well.
I look forward to getting the whole story once you're out of this in years to come, because I get the feeling you're operating here with a handbrake on, but totally understand because of the situation you find yourself in. Are you surprised overall, though, that you're nearly a decade in Germany now after leaving the A-League as a kid. It's worked out pretty well.
Yeah, for sure. You know, obviously it's 10 years nearly, and my first season in Gladbach was a good starting point. You know, I got to train with some really good players and learn a lot in a short period of time. And then after that, you know, I made the decision to move to the second league to try to get as much game time as I could. And then pretty much from then, you know, it's all flowed pretty well. Even the move to Ingolstadt was, you know, that was the best choice at the time. And then obviously we had the 2014 World Cup, and then all of a sudden, you know, there's a lot of talks where, you know, I'm wanted from a lot of people, but I decided to, I had already signed at Ingolstadt anyway. And then that also worked out really well, because first season we became champions in the second league and straight up to the Bundesliga. So for sure, up until, you know, probably this season, it's been really good. Every year I can't complain. You know, I think my career so far overseas has been really good. And yeah, you never know. I mean, things in football change very quickly. So sometimes, you know, feel like you're on top of it all, and then, you know, you have rough patches, and then, you know, that changes, it turns around again. So I think just the change is what's needed. So, you know, obviously I'll try to get a move in the summer. It's just finding out what's the best thing to do.
I remember that 2014 World Cup when you'd already signed for Ingolstadt, and then after, I think it was the Chile game, the first one in Cuiaba. Never forget that joint, Ferdingham, 35 degrees in the middle of winter, far out. That you all of a sudden you had those opportunities, and you mentioned them there. Can you tell us like what kind of clubs came in for you, and how hard is that to weigh up? Because you don't want to be known as the type of player, I guess, that signs something and then before you can even get started with them, change your mind and go for something that might appear a bit more attractive at the time.
Yeah, well, in that time in the walk, before the World Cup, obviously, you know, for me, it was You know, I wanted to sign at a club before going into the World Cup because I wanted to sort of, you know, just go in with a free mind, open, like with no sort of things in the back of my head of what's the story, what's going to happen. So, you know, that was my decision. And after that, even after the World Cup, and you know, obviously it was for me personally good because, you know, it was obviously everyone's watching the World Cup and, you know, I had a good few games. So even after that, you know, I was just some articles of, you know, interest, and, you know, now my market worth is much more. I just pretty much said to my agents, like, I don't really want to know or speak about who's interested or that. You know, I'm at English Front now, like I've just signed, and, you know, I just want to do that. And in the end, it was the right thing to do because, you know, it was winning the second Winners' League was one of the best things I've done in my career after probably the Asian Cup. And who knows if I had have decided to try to, you know, go to a bigger club or to a club that was more interested, maybe I wouldn't have, you know, be able to play. Like maybe I could have gone to a Bundesliga club and been a player that, you know, hadn't really done anything in Germany yet and just been on the bench. So I'm pretty happy with the way my path went to get to the Bundesliga. And then even this two seasons in Ingolstadt was enough to have interest from another clubs. So I really can't complain. I'm very, like, if I look back at everything that's happened, it's been really good.
Yeah, it's a long way from maybe playing footy for Essendon. Not too many people end up 20 years later talking German and having a decade in the Bundesliga after dreams of going to Windy Hill for training as a kid.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's when you start, you know, obviously even getting into the A-League was sort of just, you know, it was a bit of luck. You know, it was a last second thing that Adelaide decided to take me. And even then they were like, you know, you'll train with the first team, but you'll probably play, you know, the youth league for most of the season. But I just, you know, I did well in training and, you know, I was, before you knew it, because of a few injuries, I was already in the squad. And then, yeah, every opportunity I got off the bench just was like, it was good. You know, I showed a few things and that gave me the opportunity. And then I still remember the very first goal against North Queensland pretty much started all up, where I guess they sort of saw that, you know, I had potential to, you know, maybe help the first team. So, and then just all went good from there.
Yeah, your pace was pretty evident early on. Didn't you end up being the fastest player in the Bundesliga one year or something like that? Some newspaper over there put it, and we, of course, put it up in lights over here as well.
Yeah, I think it was the first season of the Bundesliga I played. I was the fastest. So, yeah, it's not bad, but it's not really. I'd much rather be the top goal scorer.
Well, I mean, it didn't quite work out for Usain Bolt. That's actually coming. I'm doing a podcast on Usain Bolt coming up, so that'll be interesting. But back to you. With something like the A-League where you started, could you envisage maybe you come back here, or is it too hard to tell? And you're well set up there, obviously, in Germany. Your wife's from over there, if I'm not mistaken, and you've obviously got family there now, and you feel very comfortable. You speak fluent language as well. It's it'd be a pretty hard thing to walk away from.
Funny you say that. Yeah, look, you know, it's definitely an option. I mean, I don't know, you know, obviously I sit down with John, my agent, at the end of the season and also his partners over here and see what sort of options I've got and then take it from there. But it's definitely not out of the question, you know. Obviously, like you said, you want to play at the top level as for as long as you can. And that's 100%. The way I think as well. But like I said, I just need to see what my options are and see, you know, what sort of opportunities I have. I want to make the right one. And, you know, Australia, also coming back to Australia, and it's hard to say, like, you know, my wife's sort of also in two minds, you know, coming out playing overseas, obviously here in Germany, and, you know, maybe going to another club it's obviously not, it will never be a bad thing, and it's a new challenge. But if nothing really worth it comes up, and the opportunity to go home and, you know, set myself up with the kids and everything else also at school and stuff like that, it's not something that I would say would be terrible. So I just need to see, you know, exactly what sort of options I have. But I would never say that going back to Australia is out of the question, that's for sure.
Mate, you gave yourself up with the first few words of that answer when you said, funny you mentioned that, or something like that. So we'll wait and see what happens. But that, from an Australian football fan, that's heartening to hear that you're at least considering the idea, and it's not off the table. So hopefully that lines up a few phone calls in the coming days for your agents or whoever they are from Australian-based clubs, even though the future is just so up in the air, isn't it? That's another thing to take into consideration.
Yeah, for sure. And that's another thing. You know, obviously it's a tough time for football everywhere. And even I think, you know, the transfers for all over the world will be a lot different to what they have been the past few transfer windows. So that's what I mean when I say, you know, I need to see what opportunities or what options I've got. And, you know, it's probably, you know, a lot of clubs that are sort of not high end, just, you know, well off or in a good spot. You know, it might be tough for them to make the transfers they potentially wanted to make before all this happened. So yeah, we'll just have to wait and see. It's probably, you know, it's not the best time to want to try to, you know, change clubs, but I think it's also necessary. I need to, you know, I need to change and need to go somewhere where I have an opportunity to play again.
With one thing I wanted to touch on as well, especially I remember talking to you when you came back for a Socceroos match, and I think it was when we were trying to qualify against Honduras, and there was the issue of when you go back, but you wanted to obviously celebrate the fact you made a World Cup, and how it goes down in the eyes. And Bozza and Robbie, for instance, have told me numerous stories of how they went back to their clubs, and that was basically viewed upon as the biggest sin of all time, that you got back to training late in international week. How hard has it been to balance those two things, travelling great distances to play for your country and going back to an environment like the Bundesliga where so much is expected of you on a daily basis?
Yeah, it's a tough one. You know, I think it is very hard because most clubs, they hate, you know, when we have to travel for qualifiers or any games, because the travelling is so far. So obviously we're, you know, most of the time one of the last back, and you definitely, exactly, you know, what you said with what Bozza said, it's 100% like that, you know. So, sometimes you feel like you come back and, you know, people aren't happy with you because you went away, but I don't understand what they expect. I mean, for them it's maybe, you know, not that important, but I've said all along, and even now, like, obviously my time here in Germany and playing, you know, I've played it with some good people and had some good teams, made a lot of good friends over here, but nothing beats, for me, playing for Australia and being in the camps. For me, it's the best. So, you know, they're always complaining about us travelling and playing for Australia and whatnot. And, you know, they also sort of don't take it serious because, you know, they obviously see that we play against Asian teams and think that it's always an easy job to get done. So, yeah, it is tough because sometimes also, you know, it sort of can, you know, stuff up the situation you are in. You could be, you know, leaving, playing regularly, playing well, and then come back and then excuses come in, like you seem tired. And they sort of create things that don't exist, you know. And it happens to a lot of players. I mean, I think even Barella this season, he was playing for Freiburg and then he went over to a camp in Australia and then he wasn't even on the bench. So it's definitely happened to me a few times. And even in saying that, you know, I played the very first game against Bayern Munich here this season and we drew 1-1. And then we had a camp for the national team. And I think the next game I didn't even sit on the bench because I came back on a Thursday. So it is tough sometimes. But like I said, for me, playing for Australia is, I enjoy it more than anything, any club football I've ever played. So I'd never stay at the club because the club wants me to.
Didn't you explain to the manager that you get nice like you get the flatbed and you get looked after and you get well hydrated, you don't drink and everything like that. You don't get to reason with him at all. He just like looks at you and go, you must be tired because you've just flown a long way. You can have the weekend off.
Yeah, well, for sure, because they, you know, they obviously don't travel like us, and 100% you always get jet lag when you travel. There's no question. But if you're doing it like often, and you know when the qualifiers are, you know, August, September, October, November, your body does adapt a bit. And I don't know. It's obviously sometimes you can come off a plane feeling not good, and you know, it might hit your body hard. But there's other times where, you know, I've come back from camps and, you know, there was a game last season where I wasn't even playing here at the club because I had come back from an injury. I went and played a qualifier, I think, for Australia, and then I came back on the Thursday and all of a sudden I was playing in the starting 11. And I remember that game, I felt I was flying. I think I ran like 12.5K that game, over 40 sprints in the game. So it's, for me, it's just the I don't know. They're searching for excuses, for me. Yeah. Not to not let you play, but like if the game doesn't go well or something's not right, then you know it's something you can throw it at. Yeah, you look tired out there or something like that, which maybe it's not true. It's just, it is what it is. That's how it works. There was, when you lose games, there's always, you need to find solutions to reason why, and it's an easy way.
Yeah, it sounds like you're powerless in so many aspects over there, and you just have to go along with it. Just overall, how do you view your Socceroos career?
Mine? I've loved playing for Australia all the time, and, you know, I've been lucky enough to be consistently in the squad. You know, I think I came in pretty much from day one when Ange took over, and, you know, I felt confident, and then so I was able to perform, and, you know, I was pretty much in the setup ever since then. I just loved on the national team. I don't know. It's just, you know, the environment's good. Obviously, you know, we've got a great bunch of guys. And I've been able to experience a lot of things. I've gone to 2 World Cups. We won the Asian Cup. Even qualifies as an experience. Until you've done it, you can't really explain how it is. But it's good. Everything about it. I mean, even, you know, going to some tough places sometimes, it's an experience that you never would be able to get. And, you know, you get to see parts of the world and how, you know, they live and how it all works over there, that, you know, you'd never normally see that sort of stuff.
It sounds like even if we went back into Oceania and started playing Solomon Islands again, you'd still put your hand up to come back and play whatever game it was if there was a national anthem played at the front of it.
It's I don't know. I always loved it. I don't know why. Obviously, it's everyone dreams to play for Australia, but just the environment, the games, you know, it's, I don't know. I can't explain why, but I just love playing for the national team.
I don't know if you know, you actually ended up on the front of a T-shirt, and it's one of my favourite Socceroos moments from a World Cup game back in 2014 in Porto Alegre when we were playing Holland, and we had them on the rack and they were worried, and you could tell in the stands and on the pitch as well. And you and Ron Vlaar came together. Can you quantify what exactly was said here? This is the perfect medium because I can beep out what I'm about to say. Did you go up to Ron Vlaar and say, "F***ing fight me"?
No, I remember exactly that. It was funny. I remember, I think there was something happening in the box, and I went down. I didn't even claim for a penalty, but I just obviously went down, and then he sort of jumped up straight away and cracked the shits. And I remember, I didn't say that, but it was funny to see. I remember exactly. I said, I think I said, you fucking fouled me. But I didn't say fight me.
Damn. Still a good story.
Definitely didn't say that.
But overall, the Socceroos career, Ange, Tuani, with the Socceroos, obviously we had Bert van Marwijk in the middle of it all, so that's kind of a transition period. But the two main Australian club managers who have been so successful in the A-League going into that. How have you found them as a Socceroos boss? A bit different in terms of character, am I guessing?
Yeah, they're definitely a little bit different. I find them both very good. I mean, Ange was a little bit more, you know, he was very like a tactician. You know, he had one way of, he wanted to play a certain way, and we did everything we could to do that the best we could. And he was very, I guess, how should I say it? He was, you know, sort of, he just, he didn't really have too much interaction with players on a personal level. And, you know, he said that from the start, that's his sort of character. But it was also, you know, it was never a problem, I think. You know, obviously every player needs or has a better feeling from what they get off their coaches. But for me, I'm not the type of guy that also loves to speak every day with my coach, and that I just like to, you know, obviously just do my thing on the pitch and, you know, have obviously normal relationship with them. But I don't need to be best buddies with my coach. And, you know, Ange was, you know, a little bit like that. But I think, you know, people towards the end were a little bit like frustrated of the way we played under him. But I think it also helped Australia in a big way. Even you see that some of the A-League teams, they're starting to play the more possession type game, and you know, it's sort of paid off for, you know, paid off Brisbane when he was there. Victory started doing it. Sydney now, when I watch some of their games, you know, they're always dominating possession. So, you know, for me, and obviously, what can I say? He started my career in Australia, so you know, obviously, very, very grateful of that. And you know, under him, I played majority of games, so. You know, obviously nothing bad to say about Ange. For me, he was a great coach, and you know, we had a great 4 years with him.
Even at right wing back?
To be fair, you know, because we were such a you know, dominating force in the qualifications, to play in Asia as a right wing back wasn't too bad, because yes, I was a right wing back, but the mentality that Ange had was, you know, we were almost like wingers anyway. You know, we were so high all the time, and yeah, sometimes it was dangerous, but you know, for me personally, you know, it wasn't too bad, because yeah, you know, when I had to run back and, you know, put in a shift to get back, but majority of the time I was pretty offensive anyway. So, but you know, that was you know, what he wanted to do at that time. You know, he wanted to change formation, play with the wing backs, and I think that was majority of where he got his criticism at the end, because of the, you know, the formation, and people were saying it wasn't working. But you know, that was just Ange's way. You know, he never wanted to, you know, make decision based on pressure of media or other people. You know, he wanted to do his thing his way, and you know, he got us to the World Cup. So can't say too much, as much as people probably, you know, were angry at them at the end. You know, he got us to the World Cup. So, and with Arnie, you know, Arnie's completely different. I mean, Arnie's a very open guy. He likes to, you know, have a good relationship with all the players. And, you know, there's always a few of us that, I think there's 3-4 of us, not sort of leadership group, where, you know, he tries to get feedback from the boys as well. And, I've never been a part of anything with Arnie. I've seen, you know, his success in Sydney, but I had never, you know, never seen how he was as a coach. And you know, until now, it's really good. Like I said, the environment in the national team is always good. And you know, he's made it that much better, because you know, he wants that we have fun. He wants us to enjoy, and obviously then performing on the pitch makes that all happen. Yeah, I'm looking forward to the future, the Australia national team, whenever that will be. Who knows? You know, there's boys, I've had a few Zoom meetings, but I haven't been able to make it because I've always been training, just on, you know, with the update on what's going on. But I think, you know, I don't know what type of information you have. They reckon that it's going to be a little while, or at least, maybe for the rest of this year, there won't be any games for the national team.
Yeah, highly doubtful. I can only speak from what is going on in Australia, but I can't imagine international travel is start firing up anytime soon without 14-day quarantine times when you get to Australia before a vaccine or before next year. So, yeah, I don't know if you've planned a holiday back here to Australia in the off-season, but you might have to spend a bit of it in a hotel room, Matty.
Till now, I haven't planned nothing. I wanted to come back last year, but decided not to because of my wife was pregnant, and now I don't think I want to sit 24 hours in a plane anyway with a one-year-old.
No, thanks. So one last one, a cultural question. So how deep is your understanding of the German language now? Are you an absolute expert in it and you're all over it and you'll have that for the rest of your life?
Oh, tough to say if I'll have it for the rest of my life. I mean, right now, I understand nearly everything. Majority of words that people say every day, I understand. If I'll lose it, I never know, because this is the only language other than English I've ever learnt. So it'll be interesting to see if I'll ever, lose it one day. I'm living in Berlin. It's a very touristy city. Majority, we have a lot of internationals, so I still don't really speak much German. It's always English at the club, just with the coach and a few other boys that can't speak English. I'm speaking German, but otherwise, I'm speaking English all the time. So I'm still not fluent in speaking because I don't speak enough of it. But in terms of understanding, I understand everything. It'll be interesting to see if I lose it one day. But I don't think so because, my wife's German, and I'm sure she'll continue to speak to the kids in German, even if, when we move back to Australia to live one day, I'm sure she wants the kids to learn German and that. So it'll still always be around.
And it could be one day soon by the sounds of things, but I won't put any pressure on you. But, mate, thanks so much for having a chat. Much appreciated, and good to learn a bit about your background story and how much you love the national team. It really shone through there, and also what's going on with your contract situation. Hopefully it clears up, and also everything with COVID-style football. It's a weird old space at the moment, but really appreciate your time, mate.
No problems. Thanks for having me.